97 WABC radio studios in the center of the universe, New York City. It's the Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour, starring Rob Bartlett. And now, here's your host, Rob Bartlett.
Welcome. Welcome, everybody, to the Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour. I am Rob Bartlett, and this is my comedy hour. It's those of you who don't listen to us on the podcast, from now on, segment four is going to be only available on the podcast. It's going to be all outtakes and stuff that we can't say on broadcast radio and juicy stories. And
cursing.
And we might actually have something this show for segment four. I don't know. We'll see.
Save it.
We'll see.
Exclusive content.
Well, it is. Exactly. That's what we're going to call it. Exclusive content.
Will there be nudity?
There'll be nudity. There'll be nudity in segment four. Radio nudity. This is what we offer you, our listeners, our followers, on the Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour podcast, which, by the way, is available.
You know, someone's now frantically Googling everybody and figuring this all out now.
You think so?
I hope so.
Just jump in when I'm about to do a promo. Whenever
sorry,
you want. Just don't.
Go ahead.
Right. No, it's fine.
I'm just going to go this way.
No. I've actually hurt Steve's feelings, which is bad because he's engineering the show. So God knows what he's going to do with this before it's over.
No.
Yeah, no, I know you're a professional. But, by the way, we might as well introduce you. Ladies and gentlemen, actor, singer, composer, lyricist,
Dreamboat.
Keep going.
Dreamboat.
This is great.
Steve Mecca. Part of the Robbio Radio Players. And also we have a lovely and talented lady who is starring in a film short and is working on a second one, as far as I know. And she'll be in all the film festivals, as we are with our Dr. Mantis, which we'll talk about later on. Whitney Johnson. One of the more delightful people on the planet, and someone who never fails to come up with something that's going to make us laugh. Someone who lives a very different life, and someone for whom the world is a very different place. Sometimes a different planet. Mandy Lee Pantyhose Thompson.
Thank you. I thought I was Whitney when you were describing her before. I was confused.
No, it's okay. It's just which is so unlike you to be confused,
it's like
Mandy.
I haven't started any film shorts.
It just, it never fails. It never fails.
I saw it from across the table. She's like, is this me? Is this me?
You're a gift. You are just a gift.
I try.
What did I say about you at the very beginning? You were guileless.
Guileless. And then I didn't know what guileless meant.
Yeah, you thought I meant you didn't have a boyfriend.
Right.
And I said, no, it's guileless. And the designated phony laugher, my co-writer, screenwriter, playwright, former Saturday Night Live head writer, Mr. Andrew Smith.
Yeah. Designated, clapper?
A phony laugher.
Phony laugh.
Yeah, doing the fake laugh to try and entice everyone else to laugh, including those of you listening.
Right.
Well,
that's my life.
That's true.
Well, and we're rolling.
And, of course, where would we be without our MVP, BWOC?
Yeah. What?
NFW, LOL.
Yeah. What does that stand for?
Well, the MVP, Most Valuable Player.
Yeah.
BWOC, Big Woman on Campus.
I did not know that.
Yes. And LOL is Laugh Out Loud.
Right.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Megan Simard, ladies and gentlemen.
I love the kid, Megan.
Megan Simard, who has been with us since she was knee-high. Knee-high. She's been with us that long.
Wow.
Knee-high. Yeah. Yes, we're now bilingual. We're now a bilingual program.
Isn't it supposed to be knee-high to a grasshopper?
Yeah, but I didn't want to say grasshopper because it sounded disgusting. She would be knee-high to a praying mantis because that's who she plays in Dr. Mantis, Insect Analyst, which is, by the way, winning laurels left and right on the Independent Film Festival circuit. And she plays the title character, Dr. Mantis, the praying mantis analyst of the insect who happens to be me, the caterpillar who doesn't want to be a butterfly. He wants to be a stand-up comedian.
So deep.
It is deep. It is deep. And it's all in 3.5 minutes. It's amazing.
You may want to mention, Rob.
Yes.
Village Cinema.
At Village Cinema, November 4th. You can actually go see Dr. Mantis, Insect Analyst, in the New York Independent Short Film Festival.
Cool.
At Village Cinema.
At Village Cinema, which is in the Village here in New York City. But you can actually see it for yourself.
Wow.
And watch it win another award. You watch.
It will.
Watch. Yeah. Everything. Movies, TV, theater. I do everything. I do everything.
Tap dancing.
Which kind of leads me into why we're going to do the kind of show that we're doing tonight. Tonight is going to be a little different. It's a theme show. And the theme is me.
All right.
The theme is me. It's all about me because it is the Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour.
How did you come up with that?
I just decided. I woke up this morning and I said, you know what? Tonight is going to be the real Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour. It's going to be all about the Robbio. And so I have all these emails that I've been getting since we started the podcast, which is, this is show 20, by the way. That's how long we've been doing this.
Wow.
So we're racking them up. And I've been getting emails, and there were more and more emails every week, and I just don't have the time to sit down and answer them all. People have a lot of questions. They want to know a lot about what's going on, what I've done in my life, what I've not done in my life, what I will do in my life. Just got a lot of questions. And so I thought it'd be great if we just took one particular show and answered some of these emails. And they come from all over the country, actually all over the world. We actually got one from Liverpool.
Really?
Yeah, from my mate Ian. And we're going to ask you that if you do have a question and you want to get an answer on the air, it's robioradiocomedyhour@gmail.com. R-O-B-I-O, Radio Comedy Hour at Gmail. And if we read your email on the air, you will get some free Robbio swag. That's right. We got a buttload of buttons and stickers and maybe even T-shirts. But we're going to wait on that. But it's going to be a really good letter for you to get a T-shirt.
Yeah.
So we're going to have you guys read some of these emails.
Awesome. So I'm looking forward to learning here.
Me too.
Do I detect a notice sarcasm in that voice there? It's just, I'm going to be learning here. What was that about, Mecca?
Well, you know, we've spent years together so far, and
yeah,
some of these questions, I'm looking at some of them right now, and a lot of these answers I don't know.
Well, there you go.
And
even you're going to learn something.
I want to know more about you, Rob.
Yeah, that was a really good cover. You covered that really well.
It was completely genuine, I promise. All right, 8 minutes and 56 seconds, remove question.
That's funny.
All right, who's got the first question? Where's it coming from?
Ooh, I'll do it. No, go ahead, Mandy.
Me? Okay. Rob.
Who's this from? Where are you from?
Is this from Justin P.T. Pleasant? The first one, they match up like that?
Justin from Point Pleasant.
Oh.
Justin at P.T. Pleasant. Like that was an email address? P.T. Pleasant, is that like a new circus? The P.T. Pleasant circus?
It would be a nice email address. It's so pleasant.
It's Justin from Point Pleasant. What does Justin want to know?
Okay, Justin wants to know. He says, you used to do Hulk Hogan. On IMIS.
Did Justin actually write it like that?
Yes. Did you ever meet him? Did he ever comment? Were you ever in danger of having Richard Belzer moment?
Okay, that's more than one question. So we're going to have to leave it to just one question. Oh. Yes, I did meet Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
But I had met Hulk Hogan prior to doing him as a character on the IMIS show. I met Hulk Hogan backstage at the Manhattan Center when I was one of the original hosts of the WWF at the time, Monday Night Raw. It was myself, it was Macho Man Randy Savage, and the great Vince McMahon, the P.T. Barnum of our time, Vince McMahon. And it was a live show every Monday night on USA Network from the Manhattan Center. Once a month, we would do it from Poughkeepsie because the Manhattan Center was spoken for or something. So we did it at some hockey arena up in Poughkeepsie. And yeah, I'd met Hogan before, and Hogan was there promoting a movie because he'd kind of moved over into the film area. Didn't do quite as well as The Rock ended up doing, but Hulk had, you know,
he paved the way.
He kind of paved the way. Yeah, he played, he was the Mr. Nanny, and then he was.
Right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Right. So he did a couple of those movies, and he was there, and I was one of the first hosts of Monday Night Raw. And my stint with them, my 13 week stint with them, has landed me a position on the top 10 worst wrestling announcers of all time. I'm not number one, unfortunately. I aspire to one day be considered number one, but it was Macho Man and Bobby the Brain. I met all these big guys from the WWF, which was cool for my son because he was into the wrestling and could bring him to the Madison Square Garden when they did one of the events. And I actually got into the ring, and Giant Gonzalez crushed my shoulder and pushed me to the ground, and it was a lot of fun. The second to last show was I did an impression of Vince for the whole show. He was getting some award, some kind of humanitarian award, and so I imitated him. I got the makeup lady to get me pads, shoulder pads, and I got a tuxedo because that's what Vince would wear every week. He'd wear a tuxedo, and she did something with my cheeks and sprayed my hair, and you know, he used to do this thing with his mouth. She made my lips really big, and I do the whole Vince McMahon mouth thing, and I would just do my impression of him, which was basically him saying Monday Night Raw. I wouldn't say anything. I would just kind of like. And after the show was over, the crew, all the other wrestlers, they couldn't believe that I actually imitated Vince. Because they thought that I was wound up getting killed. Because Vince didn't, they say, he didn't have a good sense of humor about himself. Which I didn't know. Because my experience with him was in how I got the gig. I did an event. It was a benefit for Connecticut Special Olympics. And he was sitting in the front row. You know, it's like a dinner. He was sitting at the front table wearing a peach-colored three-piece velour suit. Which I did about 20 minutes on. As the auctioneer, I really hammered it. And then I got the call from him a week later. You know, we're doing this new thing. And how'd you like to? And I jumped at it. But I was awful. Well, anyway, the week after I played him, we were up in Poughkeepsie. And the sensational Sherry and Luna Vachon, the two female wrestlers, were having a fight, cat fight, outside the ring. And I was supposed to break them up, was what I was told. And I went to go break them up, and they grabbed the top of my shirt, and they pulled it, pulled my entire shirt, vest, down my pants, completely off.
Wow.
Bare-chested, on TV live. So I kind of staggered off like I'd been, you know, hurt. It went to commercial. I had the makeup lady give me a bloody nose and all kinds of, and then staggered back, and I did the rest of the show sitting by the ring with a torn T-shirt and a bloody nose and a black eye.
Was this after you did the impersonation?
This is after I did the person.
So he set you up?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's why he's the P.T. Barnum of our time, I'm telling you.
Wow.
He knows exactly what he's doing. So, and then I realized that I just wasn't cut out for it, and I left. You can't fire me. I quit.
you mean it's fake?
What?
The wrestling?
No. It's athletic entertainment.
Yeah.
Yes. Story right. Story driven.
Fake.
Story driven. We have another question. From where?
Oh, here's a question from Don in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And Don wants to know, which since you mentioned Don Imus, how did you end up on the Imus show? Or I mean, did he choose you, or you chose him? Or
it's probably a little bit of each, because I was doing another benefit for a Make-A-Wish Foundation and wanted to promote it. I had been going on Soupy Sales show when Soupy had a show on after Imus on WNBC 66 WNBC, and I used to open for Soupy, and I had a relationship with Soupy, but Soupy wouldn't have me on for whatever reason. I was doing a gig with another comic who happened to be Imus's producer at the time, Mark Sheff. And so I was talking about this benefit, and Mark said, well, why don't you come on the Imus show? You know, we have comedians on Fridays. So I went in, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I did my Tom Carvel bit, which was my signature bit at the time, where, you know, hello, I'm Tom Carvel. You guys are too young to remember him.
Sorry.
185-year-old guy who sold, you know, soft ice cream. And I was the first one.
The whale and the...
You know, Fudgy and the Whale and buy one, get one free. He would do his own commercials. And so I went on Imus and did that and just hit it off. I mean, Imus thought it was one of the funniest things he'd ever heard. So come back anytime. So I kind of made it my business. I just kept showing up. If I got invited or not, I just kept showing up. And I would do, you know, bits for my act. And when I ran out of stuff for my act, I started writing down stuff, and I came up with a new character, Salmonella, who was this guy from Brooklyn who, you know, was kind of in the business of doing business, you know. And his first venture was the Salmonella's Geez What a Freakin' View Condominiums. It was like a condominium, but they were really tiny because they were located on the Brooklyn Bridge. I said, yeah, I know, they're small, but geez, what a freak of you. So that was, and then the night before Christmas came out of that, and yada, yada, yada. Then they started paying me bit by bit, and I would get more if they played it on Saturday on the Best of Ibis. And then when they moved over to WFAN, they offered me a contract, and I was with them for 31 years. And that's how I...
And was it bliss?
It was heaven all the time. No. I mean, it was like any other job. You know, there were ups and downs. But I tell you, I owe a lot of what I am doing now to the fact that I did the Imus and Morning Show. Not just for the fact that, you know, the exposure and the connections and all that kind of stuff, but I learned a lot. You know, you got a guy who's in the business for as long as he's been in the business at that level, you're gonna learn something, you know, and I really did. And I miss it as much as I'm enjoying sleeping in. I actually miss it. You know, it was part of my life. You know, but you don't have to miss me. See, I am king of the segues. I will be at my father's place in Roslyn at the Roslyn Hotel. Yes, the legendary club is back with Epi Epstein himself seated next to the stage, like I don't know, rock and roll Buddha. He's right there. I'll be there Thanksgiving weekend, Saturday, November 24th. My father's place at the Roslyn Hotel. It's going to be a great show. And your chance to hear Salmonella's Night Before Christmas in Brooklyn, because it is the holiday season, the festive holiday season. But call My Father's Place at the Roslyn Hotel and get tickets. We're going to be back. I actually have a story about the old My Father's Place when I used to open for bands there that we're going to do when we come back. But this is the Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour on 77 WABC. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour. I am Rob Bartlett, and this is my Radio Comedy Hour. Before the break, I was talking about my next gig coming up on Thanksgiving weekend at my father's place in Roslyn. Thanksgiving weekend, Saturday, November 24th. It's the new and improved My Father's Place. It was a legendary rock club back in the 70s and 80s. And it broke, I don't know how many different artists. I mean, it broke Blondie. I mean, just a lot of bands. You know, Billy Joel got a start there. Police. Cyndi Lauper.
Wow.
The Police. I mean, a lot of bands that WLIR, which was the alternative radio station at the time, was on their playlist. I mean, they broke, and then they would go do My Father's Place. Epi Epstein booked My Father's Place. He owned it, and he would get the greatest acts there. It was in a bowling alley on Old Northern Boulevard in Roslyn. It was a converted bowling alley. And now they're at the Roslyn Hotel. It's like a really fancy, she little. It's very cool. Very, very nice. Yeah. Very nice place. And they're getting some great acts in there. But it's not a bowling alley. It's a more intimate. It's comfortable. Anyway, one night I was asked to open for a band called the Fabulous Poodles. It was a British punk band that had broken. And they were calling them the next Beatles. So, of course, being a Beatle fan, I got very excited. And so I used to have, my first car was a 1973 Nova Custom, which was like a, I don't know, pale mustard, like a brown mustard color. It's a hideous looking car. And when you worked my father's place, you'd have to park underneath the big viaduct, which is where Northern Boulevard, the real Northern Boulevard, is. And there were about a billion pigeons that lived underneath this viaduct where you would park. So I go in to my father's place. It's packed. I mean, it's jammed. It's a huge deal. WLIR was going to be covering it. I was opening for the next Beatles. I couldn't be more excited. I go backstage, and there's this guy walking back and forth, British guy. They were a British band. He says, who are you? I said, I'm the comedian. I'm going to be opening for the band. And I goes, oh, yeah, right. All right. Well, we're coming in about 10 minutes. So about 10 minutes go by, and they introduce, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my father's place. Cry goes crazy. Before we bring out the Fabulous Poodles, please welcome the comedy stylings of Rob Bartlett. And I pull back the curtain. I step out on the stage. Boo! They just went crazy. It was like 400-500 people just booing. Boo! And I'm not letting it bother me. You know, I'm decked. I got my sport jacket and sleeves are rolled up to the elbows. I'm wearing my white Capizio shoes. I mean, I am styling. I just walk out and I grab the microphone and a beer bottle whizzes past my head and misses my head by about a half an inch. I said, thanks a lot. You guys have been great. Good night. I turn around and I walk off stage, and the manager is back there. He says, oh, man, that was great. It's the longest anyone's ever been on before then. So I just was so bummed. I was so upset. I was so bummed. And I just, you know, I'm tail between my legs. I go back out to my car, which is covered. When I say covered, it looked like somebody had taken the paint buckets, of paint. No. It was covered. God. In bird feces, covered in guano. It was just covered. You couldn't see through the windows. And it was kind of the same color as the car itself. Yeah. So that was probably why they thought it was where they should. They made the final comment on the evening. Pretty much the same response as the crowd did. I literally had to go back into the club to get water get enough off the windshield so I could drive home. And then, you know, because it was at night, I couldn't take it to a car wash, and then just bucket after bucket of it. Just,
but you know, somebody ought to do a story about Long Island and rock and roll and all the people that came out of Long Island.
Well, they did. Actually, they did a documentary called Dare to Be Different, which is about WLAR.
Really?
And My Father's Place features quite prominently in that because it was huge. It was a huge deal. So I'm excited about going back. We got, what do we got? Something else? Somebody got another question?
Yeah, we got a question from, what's his name? We got Scott from St. Louis.
Okay.
Scott from St. Louis asks, what was your funniest Broadway story from when you did the shows on Broadway?
Okay. There's a couple of them. There was one when I did Chicago, which was one of the first Broadway shows I did aside from my own, which we may or may not get into tonight. I was in Chicago playing Amos, and it was, I think, the last night that Billy Zane was playing Billy Flynn. Billy Zane from Titanic, great guy. And Charlotte Dambois was playing Roxy in the courtroom scene in the second act. It's a big deal where they're recreating the murder of Fred Casely, and it's a comedic thing. It's a great piece. And they're portraying Amos, who is Roxy's husband, who is me, Mr. Cellophane, as like this brutal guy who beat his wife. And so I would have to look different to be this caricature of who they're saying he was, even though he wasn't like that. So I would mess my hair and untuck my shirt. And each night that went by, I would do it a little bit more, just because, you know, you do a show for a long time, you decide to just shake things up a little bit. Well, literally, I had my hair sticking straight up. My shirt was completely untucked, and my pants were around my ankles, and I had red heart underwear on underneath. And they were doing their part of the scene, and they turned around, and they saw me. Charlotte saw me first and started to laugh and could not speak, could not do her line. And then Billy saw, and then he couldn't do it. Now, this is an important part of the show there. It's a lot of exposition, so they have to tell the story here, and nobody's saying anything. They're just dying laughing. It's like, you know, when they break up on Saturday Night Live and they make each other laugh. One of the chorus members standing in the back in the ensemble said, well, what he's trying to say is, and what she says back is, so that's it's funny. A wonder I didn't get fired that night. But and then one of the last shows we did and How to Succeed in Business, the second half of the show, I played a different character. I played like the head of the company, and my idea was to make him, you know, look different than the original guy. It was the mailroom guy and character in the first half. And so I got them to give me a little toupee, a black toupee, which against my gray hair looked really stupid, because my idea was he made it. He started as a window washer, and the first money he made, he got himself a toupee. And they would have to clip it on, and they would have to glue it in the front so that it would stay on. Well, there was a fill-in hair person this one night, and the closing number, the big 11 o'clock number, is Brotherhood of Man, which is, if you go on YouTube and you see it, we did it in Thanksgiving Day Parade, we did it on Letterman, we did it at the Tonys. It's a really vigorous, athletic number. I mean, the fact that I actually even did it, you know, and didn't need oxygen when I got off stage is amazing. Well, at one point, there's a turn, and I turned, and I saw out of the corner of my eye the hairpiece flying off my head over the guy next to me, the dancer next to me, Nick Mayo, who caught it, one-handed it, with his left hand, turned around, we all turned around part of the car, and he slapped it back on top of my head, and we acted like no one had ever seen it.
That's so funny.
I love that.
Yeah. Broadway. Broadway style. Broadway clips. Broadway. That's precision.
That's
craft. Got another one?
Denise from Flatbush wants to know, who were the Magnificent Seven?
Oh.
Why is that?
Magnificent Seven. I started out at Dixon's, Richard M. Dixon's White House Inn, which was a small showcase club that was owned by Richard M. Dixon, the guy who looked like Richard Nixon, and made a huge career out of being a Nixon lookalike until Watergate, and then his career ended. So he opened up this showcase club. It was the, you know, mid to late 70s, and showcase clubs were like the Improv and Catch a Rising Star were popping up everywhere. This was on Long Island, and we would go there on Wednesday nights, so open mic, and that's how I first got my first stage time, and then keep going. Eventually, there were seven of us who wound up being the core comics who continued to work there. And it was myself, a guy by the name of Bob Nelson, Richie Minervini, a guy who would go on to open up the East Side Comedy Club in Huntington, Bob Woods, the late, great Bob Woods, who was a great impressionist, Dave Hawthorne, who used to be in a trio with Billy Crystal, Jim Myers, Jackie the Joke Man.
Oh, my God.
And Eddie Murphy. We were the seven. We were the Magnificent Seven. And that was how we started. And that's how I got to meet Eddie. And then Eddie and I, you know, became friends. And Eddie and myself and Bob Nelson were then in the Identical Triplets, which was a group that we put together where we would do little snippets of our own acts. And then we would do sketches together. And we would work on the road together because we just, you know, enjoyed working together. One night we decided we weren't going to work that. We were going to take a night off. And we were going to go to the movies or go bowling or something, but we wound up back at the club. But we did an improv that night. We did an improv. Eddie had this coat. It was like this fur coat, which made him look like, you know, a hunter. And Bob used to wear a cowboy hat, and he looked like a hunter. And I was the walrus. And we just did this improv. And I used drumsticks for my tusks, and Eddie and Bob and I, we did about a 15-minute improv, which, you know, I remember it being great, but that's where we got the idea of being the Identical Triplets. So, and then Eddie and I had many more adventures, some of which you may hear in a segment 4, which is only available on the podcast.
Are they X-rated?
No, but there's some really funny stories. We like to welcome a new sponsor. I'm going to break for just a moment here. One of my idols, you know, show business idols. And usually I hate when celebrities take advantage of their notoriety to sell stuff. Like, you know, Rachel Ray sold dog food called Terrif, which makes his stuff look better than the stuff that she cooks for humans. Dennis Quaid sells insurance just because he's Dennis Quaid. You know, and Joan London, you know, A Place for Mom, which we've parodied here on this program. I heard a commercial that just made me so excited that I decided that we had to get him to be on our show. So here it is. Please welcome Christopher Walken. Hi, I'm Christopher Walken. You probably know me from all my appearances in movies on stage. Yes. Famous in sort of a weird, strange, offbeat way. All right, that's okay. I can handle that, but today I'm here in a different capacity altogether. I would like to introduce you to a new product that's actually got my name on it. I invented it, yes, that's right. Introducing the new Christopher Walken walk-in closet. It's a walk-in closet that turns any home into a showplace, and it's named after me, Christopher Walken.
I bought 2 walk-in closets, and now my stupid little split-level splanch track home feels like a mansion. I love my walk-ins. I have walk-in closets now.
Yes, happy customer. She bought a walk-in closet. A walk-in closet. Now she's happy. Interesting, isn't it? I mean, the closet. I've noticed women love closets. They can never get enough closets. Women, no matter where they live, it's always about the closets. The Christopher Walken walk-in closet takes care of all that. I might say, if I had a mind to, of course, you could have closets up the yin-yang if you wanted to. That is, the walk-in walk-in, yes, walk-in walk-in closets. They solve everything, I think.
I'm a contractor. When I do a renovation, the first thing they ask me is, hey, what about the closets? Are there going to be enough closets? What is it with the closets? Personally, I don't get it, the closet thing, but the walk-in closet, that does the trick. I use them on all my jobs, no problem. A Christopher Walken walk-in closet is a home run in my book, if you like walk-in closets, that is.
Yes, you, too, can have a walk-in closet in your very own home, right now. Maybe off the bedroom for your clothes. Get dressed inside the closet. Of course, why not? The walk-in closet fits anywhere. Of course, why not? It's a closet. Get used to it. The Christopher Walken walk-in closet, named after me, Christopher Walken. I mean, walk-in, there's a difference, you know. Of course, I'm Christopher Walken, and I invented a walk-in closet, yes, but please don't confuse the two. Christopher Walken walk-in closets. Buy one today. Why not? What have you got to lose? But clutter. Lots of dirty, stinking, disgusting clutter. It's crazy. Well, I'm going to buy one now. I don't know about you guys.
Me too. I really want
that's,
one.
That's high dollar stuff right there.
Yeah.
That's right. I will be at my father's place in Roslyn at the Roslyn Hotel Saturday night, November 24th, Thanksgiving weekend, with a big, 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 big holiday show. Salmonella's Night Before Christmas. It's going to be great. Called the My Father's Place at the Roslyn Hotel. For tickets, we'll be back with segment 3 after this brief message. Stay with us. A lot of great questions coming up here on the Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour on 77 WABC. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour. I am Rob Bartlett, and this is my Radio Comedy Hour. We have been entertaining questions from you, the listeners, of this program, this broadcast program on 77 WABC, as well as those of you who follow us on our podcast, which is available on the OG Podcast Network, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. We're all over the place. If you would like to send a question and have me answer it on the air, send it to RobbioRadioComedyHour@gmail.com. Robbio spelled R-O-B-I-O. Radio Comedy Hour, I assume you know how to spell already. And if we read your question on the air, we will send you some official Robbio swag.
Ooh.
We have some really cool swag that we will send you. Megan, why don't you read a question?
Yeah.
You haven't done a question yet.
Yeah, I have one. This is from Barbara Ann from Charleston. Mm-hmm. Barbara Ann from Charleston, South Carolina. Hey, Babs.
So you have to read it in a Southern accent.
Yeah. Barbara Ann wants to know if it's true you are friends or you know Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. Ooh. That's absolutely true. And as I said earlier, that we had started out together at Dixon's. But we worked together a lot because we were friends. We liked each other. We both found each other funny. And he's the single greatest person to make laugh. You make him laugh. It's the best. We would do the Fort Lauderdale comic strip together. And we would go to a movie at a mall. And we would be sitting in Nathan's afterwards having a hot dog. And we would just go into these characters and play these characters just trying to make each other laugh. Take on these characters, and we would just kind of improv stuff. And, you know, Eddie once said that he was Nathan Famous. That was the guy's name, Nathan Famous. How do you like my place? But we would do that kind of stuff. Or we would, like, make fun of the people who walk by. You know, we would go, that guy's got a load in his pants. You know, things like that just makes you laugh. Because, you know, we were comics. But I actually am responsible for Eddie being the star of the year today.
What? Really?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. Eddie was destined to be a star. The first time I saw him get up on stage at Dixon's, it was obvious this guy was kind of, he was 17 years old and he was already Elvis. I mean, it was unbelievable. He just had that thing, whatever that thing is. And I knew that he was going to be huge. And so we, you know, we worked a lot together and we were going to do the Fort Lauderdale Comic Strip together. It was his first time. And, you know, I was going back for the third or fourth time. So I was kind of acting like I was the cool guy. And prior to that, the night before, Bob Nelson, who is the third triplet from the Identical Triplets, he had done the Mike Douglas show. Merv Griffin. Merv Griffin was shooting a show, his show. He's doing a week in New York, and it was at Lincoln Center. And so Bob got bumped. We were all sitting around, you know, in the dressing room, myself and Reggie Minervini, a couple other people, not Eddie. And Bob's agent comes in with the bad news. You know, there's not going to be enough time. We'll bring you back, whatever. And the agent said, you know, do you know anybody? Do you know any black comics? Any you know, African-American comic? Because Saturday Night Live needs one. And in a hurry, because the guy they had cast, Charlie Barnett, apparently, unbeknownst to them, who was a brilliant comic, street guy, used to work at Greenwich Village and, I mean, Washington Square Park. Uh-huh. Unbelievably talented guy. He couldn't read. He was illiterate.
Oh.
And they only discovered that after they had hired him.
Wow.
So Bob turned to me and he said, don't you dare tell Eddie. Don't you dare tell Eddie. So we were sitting on the plane waiting to go down, and I just said, you know, why not? You know, Eddie, they're looking for a black guy for Saturday Night Live. And yeah. The minute we landed, he called Bob Wax and Richie Tinkin, the guys who owned the comic strip in New York, and they got him an audition, and they NBC strung him along for weeks, and he would come to my house before a gig, and you know, my mom would sit him down, and he'd, you know, talk about how he was so frustrating for him because they wouldn't pull the trigger, they wouldn't tell him one way or the other. You know, my mother was always like, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. Don't worry, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And wound up happening. They hired him to be a featured player initially.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And like within 2 weeks, he was a primetime player because it was just clear that he just blew everybody else out of the water.
Wow.
So, and then he got, you know, he paid me back. He got me a part on his first special, TV special, after he left Saturday Night Live and he'd done movies. It was initially going to be an NBC project called What's Alan Watching, which was a show that was about a kid whose real life and the life that he watched on TV kind of intertwined.
Oh.
And I played his sister, played by Fran Drescher. I played her boyfriend, Lenny Kling, the carpet king, whose carpet was so clean you could eat it. You could eat off it. And so they dropped spaghetti on the rug and I had to eat spaghetti off the rug. This is my television debut. Very, very classy. And so I got to do that. And that was an experience and a half, because while I was there for a month, L.A., shooting this thing. And it had been given to CBS because there was a writer strike in between when NBC was supposed to do it and CBS wound up picking it up. I think Arsenio Hall's show had just started like the week before. And, you know, he was around Eddie all the time. And one day people were on the set and they were all kind of whispering to each other. And we found out that one of the sketches was going to be Eddie playing Mike Tyson. And it was a Mike Tyson when he was getting divorced from Robin Givens. And I guess they were friends. And Mike went to Eddie and said, I really appreciate if you don't do that. I really wish you wouldn't do that for me. And Eddie says, of course I won't do it. So
right.
And so he said Eddie would not come on set until they guaranteed him that they weren't going to have to do that set.
Oh, wow.
And they wrote another sketch, which actually I think was 10 times funnier, because James Brown had just been sent to jail. Uh-huh. And they did this whole sketch of Eddie as James Brown doing, please, 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 please don't make me go. And they were like leading him out of the courtroom with the cape.
Well, anyway.
Oh, it was much, much funnier. It was really, really funny. But that was.
Wow.
Yeah, so yeah, I do. I know Eddie Murphy. I've worked with Eddie Murphy. We're friends. He didn't go to my wedding, though. He was supposed to come to my wedding, but he didn't come to my wedding. He forgot, he said.
Huh. It's busy.
Yeah, he's real busy.
Will you be invited to the wedding?
Will I be invited to which wedding?
To Eddie's wedding.
Is he getting married again?
Yeah.
He's got something like 17 kids now, doesn't he?
Wow.
Doesn't he?
He's got a lot. He's got a lot of kids.
He's got 10 kids.
10 kids or something like that.
Wow.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. Eddie had no problem with the ladies. Even when he was 17 years old. Because, you know, he was Elvis. He was comedy Elvis. I actually walked in on him once. I used to pick him up at his for gigs at his house in Roosevelt. And one night, I go to pick him up, and his mom, Lillian, says, he's in the basement. She says, just kind of like go down really quietly so you can see. And I hear Elvis, one of the live Elvis, live Vegas or whatever, one of the live Elvis shows, and Eddie's in the basement, and the song is playing, and he is literally miming Elvis with his back to the door. It's like he didn't know I was there. And he was doing the whole thing, like move by move, and lip syncing the whole thing and whatnot. And then he turned around and saw me, and it was like, I'm going to use this one day. And that's what I've just done right now. I've used it against him. I've told him. We are going to welcome another sponsor here to the Rob Bartlett Radio Comedy Hour. You know, fall is really upon us. There's a nip in the air. And the great debate of all time, Slanket versus Snuggie. It's an actual controversy. Apparently, there's a debate. The FTC busted Snuggie for false advertising, and they now have to pay their customers more than $7.2 million in refunds for their misleading commercials.
And that's right. They because they said buy one get one free, but then the shipping was more than this
more than like,
the Snuggie.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. See,
that's your direct market, ladies and gentlemen. Right there, your direct marketing. Right there, that's the key.
Wow.
Well, we have the only honest sleeved blanket commercial in the world, and we would like to welcome them.
Hi. Want to be warm and toasty this winter? Want to sit around and talk with loved ones or just watch television in real warmth and comfort? Then you don't want a Snuggie or a Slanket. You just can't trust them to do the job that a real blanket can do. You want something that spells disaster as you know it. Introducing the original Comforter, the first Red Cross approved disaster blanket that's now available for home use.
I always wondered what it would be like to be the victim of a natural disaster and have to stand around in a blanket in the cold. Well, now, with the new Comforter, I can do all of that in the comfort of my own home. Comforter is a blanket with no sleeves, so you can get that real disaster feeling without having to suddenly be homeless.
Comforter is the original disaster blanket made from the U.S. government-grade surplus wool that's guaranteed to be scratchy, itchy, and god-awful ugly, so you can get your disaster victim feeling on those long, dark winter nights ahead.
I tried a Slanket, and then I bought a Snuggie, but they're just blankets with sleeves in them. Who needs that? Give me a Comforter Red Cross issued badass ugly blanket anytime to put around myself in the cold. I want to feel warm and authentic.
The Comforter blanket is perfect for all sorts of activities, like standing in line, getting coffee from the back of an emergency vehicle, or just sitting around and waiting for your house to burn to the ground. You'll feel in the news with the Comforter around your shoulders. The Red Cross blanket for all occasions. And the Comforter makes a great gift, too.
I don't need no hurricane, no flood to feel homeless and disaster-stricken. These damn Slankets and Snuggies are too fancy for the hopeless feeling I was looking for. And they even come in bright colors with sleeves. I can wear a T-shirt for that. Now, with my new Comforter, I can feel bereft and be home by my own fire and be warm and toasty at the same time.
That's right. For a limited time only, you can feel like the Red Cross is your only hope. The Comforter is the original disaster blanket to give you that disaster feeling and the disaster look you want without the muss or fuss of losing your roof.
Thanks, Comforter. It's going to be a long, warm winter standing around with you over my shoulders.
Comforter is perfect for the whole family. I bought one for my husband and all the kids, and now we just all huddle together in the dark. Comforter has brought us together like nothing else.
I sleep in my Comforter. With Comforter, I don't need sheets, blankets, or even a mattress. Comforter is it in my book. Comforter is all I got, and it's all I need.
Comforter, the original disaster blanket approved by the Red Cross and most first responders. Available in stores or a disaster near you.
Now I want one of those. I don't know about you guys. Yeah. I definitely want one of those.
Yeah, everyone's getting one for the holidays.
I think we should. That's my Christmas present to all of you.
Oh,
a Comforter. That's right, because I get them for free. And so that way I don't have to spend any money on you guys, because I am the cheapest boss you will ever work for in your life. I want to remind you, I'm going to be at the legendary My Father's Place in Roslyn, Long Island, at the Roslyn Hotel, Saturday night, November 24th. It's Thanksgiving weekend. It's My Father's Place at the Roslyn Hotel. I don't have a web address to give you or a phone number. Do the math. Figure it out. It's the Roslyn Hotel in Roslyn, Long Island. It's My Father's Place. How hard is this? Don't make me come out there. Now, those of you who listen to us on the podcast, you stick around because you're going to get an extra little bit of, what do they call it, lagniappe in New Orleans. It's we call it segment four. It's the stuff that will not be broadcast on the regular broadcast show. So that's coming up. That's right. That's right. That's right. Maybe some outtakes, maybe some dirty words, and maybe we'll all be naked here in the radio. Who knows? But that about does it for us this week on the broadcast. I'd like to thank you all for tuning in to us. If you missed anything, go to ogpodcastnetwork.com. Our program produced by Gary Grant and me, Rob Bartlett, written by Andrew Smith and me, Rob Bartlett, featuring Megan Samard, Andrew Smith, Mandy Lee Thompson, Backstabber Steve Mecca, Whitney Johnson. Original music composed by Gary Grant, Steve Mecca. Engineering by Steve Mecca. Directed by Gary Grant. No animals were harmed in the recording of this program. After Hours. Rob
Bartlett's Radio After Hours. So, Halloween, to tell you the truth, bores the shit out of me.
Why?
You
know,
because it's like, you know, I mean,
you're a curmudgeon.
No, because everybody's, like, decorating their house. I mean, I live in Manhattan, and on the Upper East Side, they start putting cats. And
I think
this is the snob effect.
It definitely is the snob effect. We can't even, what I object to on Halloween is I think it's really sexist.
Uh-huh.
It's a sexist hall because all the costumes that women have, it's always, oh, I'm a bunny rabbit. No, I'm a sexy bunny rabbit.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
No, I'm a bail bondsman. I'm a sexy bail bondsman. It's always, you know, it's, I'm Shrek. I'm a sexy Shrek.
Right, right. Yeah, you can't just be a firefighter if you're a female.
No, I'd be a firefighter with, like, fishnets and, like, plunging neckline so the...
I used to just get, when I was in college, I used to get a broomstick and go a shit on a stick. That's the truth. That's what I did before Halloween.
Wait, Rob, what was your best costume that you did?
My best costume?
Yeah, I want to know.
I went naked on a pair of roller skates.
No.
I was a pull toy.
You did not.
No, I didn't.
You had me.
I tried to dress up as Chewbacca once because I got one of those. They used to sell those makeup kits with the latex.
Right.
And it was for like a Planet of the Apes. And I thought if I got like a long brown wig, I could kind of pull off Chewbacca. Instead, I looked like a bear that had a head wound. It was just because I was sweating and the top part was like falling off. And so of course, my wife, Sharon, and I have this enormous argument before we go to the Halloween party.
Because
and
you look better than her.
No. She was Princess Leia. She had two of the Dunkin' Donuts coffee rolls on either side of her head, which is like really clever. And she had the white thing and a lightsaber, and I was going to be Chewbacca. Uh-huh. And so she went off to the party. She took the car, and I had to walk to the party from Bayside to Bay Terrace as Chewbacca.
Oh, my God.
With these, like, furry feet shoes that I had and like, a jacket that had fur on it and a melting face. It was just like, first the top flap came off and then the bottom, and I'm trying to stick it back on myself like this. Finally, a cop pulls up and goes, are you all right? The other worst one was I used to have a great Superman costume. It comes back from a childhood, having that horrifying experience of having to wear the hat in the Superman costume. But I had a real Superman costume that I used like for a senior dress down day, like in high school. Uh-huh. And I made it out of like long johns, and I dyed them, and I had I made a felt shield and the S and the cape and the whole nine yards. And we were kind of asked to go to a hospital, we thought, to cheer up kids on Halloween. And so Sharon got dressed up as Clark Kent. And so she would go into the room first, and then she'd run out of the room, and I would run into Superman.
That's really cute.
But of course, we thought we'd be doing it for kids. Uh-huh. No. 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 We get to the hospital, and we are in the wing where it's the God's waiting room.
Oh,
wing.
No.
It's like the hospice care wing.
Oh,
and so,
God.
So Sharon going, oh, I'm doing a story. I'm doing a, help me. Please help me. And she'd walk out of the room, it's Superman. Superman, fly me out of here. I'm not ready to die. It's Oh, God.
That sounds like a gig that Gary would get you.
Wait. This is the point of the story. I'm driving there in my little shitbox 73 Nova Custom that's mustard colored, and I get a flat tire in the pouring rain on the Southern State Parkway. So I pull over to the side of the road. I'm in a Superman costume, pouring rain. I'm changing a tire. A cop pulls up behind me. You know, I think, oh, great, I'm going to get some help. Cop rolls down his window and goes, what's happening? Yeah. Said, I got a flat tire.
Soup.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you just fly there? And drives off.
Oh, God.
Son of a bitch.
By the way, for anybody who wants to hear the story about you as a kid at Superman, they can go back to the last episode of the podcast.
That's right. Episode 19, I talked about that horrifying story, which I told on stage, by the way, the other night.
Oh, yeah?
I did.
How'd it go?
Actually, it went pretty well. I find the more that I open myself up to my fans, the more they relate to it. The more we feel closer. We have a bonding experience, so they know.
I once went with this really...
We're talking about me, Andrew. We don't really want to hear about you anymore.
We haven't heard a word.
That's right. Mandy, what happened? Normally you were...
No, well, I already told my greatest Halloween costume story. When I was my own Pinky, who I've named Lola.
Yeah, we heard that. Yeah. And basically, for those of you who didn't hear the story, she looked like a giant dick. She was just an erect penis going door to door, and you wonder why they sent you home from school.
With curly black hair.
Oh, of course.
She had a fro. And the four fingers to go with it.
Okay, but the four fingers really just kind of looked like...
Like it was...
Somebody masturbating. It was like they were jerking you off.
They called me
you were going from door to door as, you know, a walking masturbation, basically. I was the jerk off.
I did dress up my cat, Finian. He's a black and white cat, so he always looks like he's in a tuxedo. And I make him Tommy Toon every single Halloween. I have a little felt top hat for him.
There are 1,000 people that you could make him be if he looks like he's in a tuxedo, and you choose Tommy Toon?
Yeah.
What is he, a tall cat?
He is tall. He's just, he loves Broadway. He loves Liza Minnelli. Oh my gosh, he loves Liza. I should have him meet you, Rob.
You are just a movable feast. You're just an endless series of amazing stories.
Thank you.
Mm. What about Megan's costume? Favorite costume, maybe? I don't know.
Favorite costume?
Funny story, maybe?
I've never been good at Halloween, ever.
Just put it out. Did you do Halloween?
I went as my alter ego this year, so I was just like super dark and goth because I didn't really think about it. But I own a lot of black clothing, so that was pretty easy. But I think when I was a kid, I told my mom that I wanted to be a gypsy one year, which I think now isn't even PC. But but you know, it was a couple of decades ago. But so she went all out and she really put together this awesome like gypsy costume with like the scarves and the jewelry, and she was like, she had me pose to like read my dad's palm. And I did everything, like, very, you know, because she told me to do it, and she was taking pictures. But the entire time, I meant Egyptian. And I saw myself in the mirror after all of this, and I was like, that's not what I wanted. I had no idea.
You thought you were going to be Cleopatra.
I thought I was going to be Cleopatra, and she was having, and I had no idea until after all of it. But I went with it, because she worked so hard on it. I didn't tell her.
And that's why you are a performer. That's why you're an actress, because your mother... fucked you up the way every parent does to their kid when they're trying to be, you know, trying to be a real kid, and that's why we end up going into show business, because we've led such awful childhoods.
I was actually, that brings me to my favorite costume. I was in third grade, and my mom woke... I had to be at school at about 8 o'clock-ish. My mom woke me up at 4:45 so she could place every little bit of fake hair on my face so that I could be the most convincing werewolf that town had ever seen.
But that's beautiful.
It's looking back on it, it's sweet, but I woke up and I'm like, Jesus. Come on, Mom. But no, she did a great job.
I used to go with this girl who dressed up one Halloween as a urinal. You know, she was urinal, you know, and I remember getting, and I go,
you know, it's just, why does it always go there with you? It always goes there with you.
The truth.
You know, that's it. We're going that's
your passing out in her costume.
Thank you. As normal, as you would normally.
Yes. But, you know, drunk.
Aren't you people lucky who listen to the podcast to get this segment four exclusive to the podcast? We hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget, you want to send us an email, RobbioRadioComedyHour@gmail.com. And if we read your email on the air, you will get some official Robbio swag, Radio Hour swag. And we got two or three things. That's it. We'll see you next time. Check us out on WABC 77. Yeah. And
see you later.
And, yeah. Now get the fuck out.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.